We as gay people haven't caught up to how much progress we've made and how much receptivity there is in so many straight people.
We have options the earliest gay trailblazers could never have envisioned.
We are people who have been thrown up generation after generation throughout the millennia by the forces of natural selection. And through that, we are able to act as a mirror to see certain things that the straights can't possibly see.
Such as?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Our news wrap crew will return after the holidays to update the latest news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world. We're closing out this crazy year with some wise words from pioneering queer writers and wizards. First Fairy Harry Hay and his longtime friend, historian Jim Kapner, join us later in the program. Deb Price's syndicated column changed attitudes back when printed newspapers actually did shape public opinion. In this recent find from the This Way Out archives, Price and her colleagues talk about the meaning of the column's success. From May of 1993, here's producer Dave Buell.
In a word, Deb Price is mainstream.
I work for the Detroit News. It's owned by Gannett. Gannett owns more than 80 newspapers, including USA Today.
By the end of its first year, Price's pioneering gay and lesbian issues-oriented column had found a home at several dozen Gannett newspapers. In late 1992, when it became available to non-Gannett publications through the Los Angeles Times Syndicate, several other papers began running it as well. In addition, Price's work has also received the recognition and respect of her colleagues.
Column was named within Gannett the best Metro column of the year, which was a really, really big deal. And so I think that added some stature to it.
To her lesbian and gay readers, no doubt, the really big deal is having the chance to read her columns in their daily papers at all. But for Price, to couple that with a sense of amazement is to miss the point entirely.
We as gay people haven't caught up to how much progress we've made and how much receptivity there is in so many straight people. We tend to think in terms of it being this gay versus straight issue. It's not. And there's a lot of people who, even if they're not pro-gay, they're pro-news, and they're pro-serving their readers. And that means getting in a voice and a different perspective and getting in information about gay issues that they don't have access to other than through this column or through a similar column that they could start.
Good afternoon, News Leader.
The Springfield, Missouri News Leader is typical of many small city Gannett newspapers and was one of the first to pick up Price's column. Bill Tatum edits the paper's Life and Times section.
We started using it because we felt like it was something we needed to do, and we've also made the gay and lesbian community part of the diverse variety of people in the Ozarks that we feel like we need to be representing in the News Leader. The Ozarks, like the rest of the country, the people who live here are becoming more accustomed to seeing discussions of gay and lesbian issues, and as a result of that, they are becoming perhaps more accepting. I hear people more willing to discuss the issue, and perhaps there's a little more tolerance in their discussion than there would have been before the subject was so commonly talked about. And that's not just Deb Price, that's news. That's breaking news stories as well.
The breaking news story in early 1993, of course, was President Bill Clinton's plan to end the prohibition against gay and lesbian military personnel, and the attendant hysteria prompted Price to write a series of columns devoted to the issue.
The gays in the military columns, those columns really needed to be done. There was so much misinformation out there, and I really wanted to be able to try to get facts out there to confront all these fears. Well, those columns were really well received as far as straight readers, but also by gay readers who had been listening to this stuff and wishing somebody was there to give a different side. And that's something that's been really important to me. I mean, I grew up as a young person knowing I was gay and never felt like I had anybody on my side. And I really want someone every single week to feel like they can know that Deb Price is on their side And that's really important to me. I mean, I really value and appreciate the power that comes with a column like this to be able to reach people who feel very, very isolated and very alone.
While Price often provides a perspective on the day's headlines, she is just as likely to write about her home life with Joyce Murdoch, her lovemate of 7 years. She's shared snapshots of their trip to gay-friendly Provincetown, discussed the difficult situation of introducing Joyce without benefit of a handy term such as wife or husband, and related their experience of buying a car together. And in one column, she transported her readers to Macon, Georgia, and to Joyce's high school reunion.
The question I'll not soon forget was put to us by one of the women Joyce insists on calling the MNOPs, a group who became friends while being seated together in class after alphabetized class. Now, I want to ask y'all this, and I hope y'all won't be offended. In unison, we caught our breath. This was the old friend Joyce had most counted on seeing. I feared we were about to be hurt. Now, why haven't y'all had children together? You seem to like kids so much. We burst into goofy grins and babbled on about truly loving dogs best. And I knew exactly what Joyce had always seen in her friend Kathy Moxley. Sometimes we get so caught up in trying to control other people's reactions to our being gay, in trying to avoid yet another painful encounter, that we miss the pleasure of being loved for exactly who we are. The world is changing in delightful and unexpected ways. We have options the earliest gay trailblazers could never have envisioned. Don't let fear choose your path.
The way that I saw the column from the very beginning was it wasn't just going to be a gay version of a traditional column. This column needed to meet a totally different need, which was to try to introduce a gay person to people who don't know that they have anybody gay in their life. That meant I'd have to open up my life, and it meant from the very beginning that Joyce would have to be a big part of the column. And we discussed that. Either we were going to be totally a part of the column as a couple, or it just wouldn't work. So the very first column was about Joyce, and she's usually in about 40% of the columns. And I get mail all the time. I'll say something like, I can't wait until Tuesday to find out what you and Joyce have been up to. And that's really heartwarming because so much of what we are lacking as gay people is support. And so many gay people who are my readers are so isolated that for them it's really nice to get to meet another couple. It's not just straight people. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics in this column because of the fact it's appearing in mainstream newspapers. It's just reaching a lot of different kinds of people. For example, I get a lot of letters from parents who send the column every week to one of their gay kids who lives somewhere where the column doesn't appear. And that becomes a way for the parents and the kids to talk at a level that they haven't before. And it's just that sort of wonderful support that gay people want from their parents, and so often that parents want to give, but they don't really know how. So often our lives seem foreign and strange because these worlds have been so separate. And so one of the things that I think the column is very effective in is showing that our lives really aren't that different.
That was one of the ideas that she presented to us when she proposed the column.
Bob Giles is the publisher of the Detroit News and is Price's boss.
I thought it was very important because one of the purposes of this column, in my view, is reader education.
It was Giles who gave the original go-ahead for Price's column in May of 1992, and since then, he's fielded his share of calls from other publishers deciding whether or not to run her pieces.
I tell them that some of the experiences that we have had here with angry letters or vicious criticism, and the thing I reassure them most is that the criticism we get, the narrow-mindedness and the intolerance that is reflected in the letters and the phone calls, just reinforces my belief that our readers need to know a lot more about the subject.
Editors are gutsy people, Price will tell you, but their willingness to include gay issues in their pages has been a long time in coming. Now, she says, it's up to newspaper readers to ensure that that trend continues.
One of the things that we as gay readers have forgotten is that newspapers are there to serve all readers. And if you don't tell a newspaper that you want improved gay coverage, that you want a gay column, that you want a gay voice, The newspaper doesn't know that. And another thing about that is I have gotten so many letters and phone calls from people where they'll say, could you send me your columns? You know, I really, really want to read your column. And I'll say, well, okay, I'll send you some columns, but why don't you go ask your newspaper? This was what a call I got from Nashville. Nashville would never run a gay column. Nashville runs my column every week now. The other thing that a lot of editors don't realize, as far as looking for newspaper readers, gay people are great newspaper readers. I mean, first off, we make more than the average person as far as income. And in addition to that, there was a recent study done by Overlooked Opinions, the gay pollster in Chicago, and they found that 89% of gay people they surveyed said they would be more likely to subscribe to a newspaper that had a weekly gay issues column. So this is really a circulation issue.
Perhaps it's symbolic of changing attitudes within mainstream American papers that the Detroit News allowed Price to give up her duties as news editor in its Washington bureau last February. She'll now be able to concentrate on her column full-time as it enters its second year.
I loved being a news editor, but I was trying to juggle two things, and so it really restricted the kinds of columns I could do. So I think they're going to be a lot of different kinds of columns where I can spend a lot of time with a person or with a program and be able to report it in the way that it should be. And so in the next year, I think the column is going to take off in some new directions because suddenly I'll have time.
And in a growing number of newspapers around the U.S., Deb Price will have the space. For This Way Out, I'm Dave Buell in Kansas City.
Deb Price passed away this year on November 20th. Her early columns are collected in the book And Say Hi to Joyce.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out.
What kind of country do we want to
be? I
want
to be in a parade.
I arrived here during the Cold War from the Soviet Union.
This is evidence not going to end well.
Police sirens wailing. Get on the ground.
I campaigned for the presidency.
A lot of Polish activists fear that Poland is going into the same direction as Russia has been going.
Amy Coney Barrett.
Ready to say goodbye to this whirlwind year? Come join our 2020 TGIO party at thiswayout.org. Check out the queer highlights and lowlights and look for the light at the end of this turbulent tunnel. A toast to our family of supporters at thiswayout.org.
Baby, have I got a ball gown to show you.
Two LGBTQ movement legends got together in 1975. While This Way Out associate producer Lucia Chappell, as a dyke tyke, she wrote this, folks, got to watch their conversation through the studio glass. And now you can listen in through our gay window.
I had been an active gay person, I suppose, since about the time I was 17 or 18. As a matter of fact, I sort of came out in the fall of 1931. On the Stanford campus, declaring myself to be homosexual, that I would not pretend, I would not pull a mask over myself, I would say who I was, and declared myself openly.
Long before queer theory was an academic discipline, there was Harry Hay. To really understand Hay's role in the development of queer consciousness, we turn to a 1975 interview when he expressed the original ideas that led to the founding of Radical Fairies in 1979. And long before there were well-funded libraries and archival collections of LGBT history, there was Jim Kepner, founder of the International Gay and Lesbian Archives, a collection that is now part of the One Archives at the USC Libraries. Their discussion begins with some early history.
After 1953, the Mattachine Societies, which by that time had spread to several major cities, placed the emphasis on the physical elements, on the performance of sex acts, on the question of whether there was a genetic or hormonal imbalance or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider this a part of the breakaway from the original Mattachine ideals?
Yes, I certainly
and in
do.
What way do you?
The people who were involved in the original society were concerned with two major questions with a possible third. First was who we were, who were we? And Second of all, what were we for? And then when we knew all this and had put all this together, this is what our idea was, to find out all we could possibly find out about ourselves. And when we knew, then to negotiate a relationship between ourselves and the parent society as a group, as an entire group. Also, we introduced at this time the name homophile. And the idea of using the name homophile at that time was to call attention to ourselves as persons, to ask the society to hold us to account as persons, and not in terms of clinical acts, which is what we were at that time. We were a criminal act at this point. We wanted to be seen as spiritual, intellectual, political persons, and be called to account as social persons.
In your own background, did your consciousness of being different precede your involvement in sexual activity?
Oh, considerably, considerably. I had a vision, Jimmy, which I can remember having, maybe by the time I was 9 or 10 years old, of a vision that someday I would see and I would meet this other person who would be my lifelong companion. This is not a way to put it, 9 or 10 years old. 9 or 10 years old, I'd be looking for that other boy I wanted to be able to be, I didn't know, but all kinds of things with. And I could see him standing on a hillside, and he was holding his hands out to me, and we would run, and we'd go to see the sunrise, and we would never be separated.
I guess I wasn't the only one looking for that sunrise, sunset.
As a matter of fact, I've even talked to young straights about this, and I find the same thing, particularly ones who have a doubtful vision, and I always say to them, look, that's your real dream. Whatever the sex of that person who is calling you to run to the top of the hill to see the sunrise or the sunset, this is the one you're looking for. Mm-hmm.
What do you see as our priorities now?
Well, frankly, I would say that what has happened is that ground has been cleared, space has been given for us to get down to the real business of doing what we're supposed to be doing. And I would say that our real work now is to begin to establish the gay vision and begin to show that the gay vision is something that has within itself an enormous contribution to make to the parent society. We are people who have been thrown up generation after generation throughout the millennia by the forces of natural selection. And through that, we are able to do certain things. We are able to act as a mirror to see certain things that the straights can't possibly see.
Such as?
Well, among other things, most of us, I mean, any of us who are, say, past 40, have probably had the experience of being what is known as the office queen. And the office queen is usually a person to whom everybody seems to have some reason for wanting to tell secrets to. So, in effect, we become people who explain the men to the women and the women to the men. Now, realizing that we ourselves, by the time we were 15, had to learn to see the way the straights see in the world, or we would probably have been beat to death. You know, we wouldn't have been able to get through junior high school. But we have our own gay window. And to the extent that we begin to appreciate and become conscious of the fact that we have our own window on the world, our own value judgments, we are generally non-competitive, non-aggressive people. We very early find that we want to cooperate with people at a point when that hasn't been explained to you yet, and where that's not where the kids are at all. The straights take their aggressive competition as a matter of course. If we're going to play in that peer game, we have to learn it, and we have to learn it very hard because it's very difficult for us to do, which means, among other things, that we have to learn to copy the straights. We not only copy the boys, but we copy how the boys do it, so we know that when the girls react to us, they react to us in a way so that they're not going to get wise to the fact that we're different, and the rest of the boys aren't going to notice that we're any different, too. Once we realize that we can see through their window and our own gay window, we can actually have a triangular vision. We would not keep reappearing under the laws of natural selection over the millennia if we didn't in some way favor survival. And now I'm suggesting that if that is the case, that we begin to use it consciously and begin to act in a responsible way to the spiritual survival of our family, namely Homo sapiens. In other words, to begin to talk subjectively rather than simply objectively. When we talk about the gay window, talk about this gay consciousness, speak to young gay people and talk to them directly, they look right at you and say, oh, this is perfectly true, and I never thought about it before until this moment. So that, in effect, what we have been doing is talking to gay people and telling them to recognize what they know. They will say that we're helping them to know what they know, or calling them to understand what they know, because they may never have understood it before, but the moment that we mention it to them, they sort of reach out as though they were kind of pulling words out of your mouth, and we just go right on from there. We know exactly what we're talking about.
You mentioned the other day the interpretation of a major Shakespeare sonnet, which has the gay implication.
when first your eye, eyed. Mm-hmm. Now, we have to recognize that the moment that any gay person reads that line, we know exactly what he's talking about, because we've been going around eyeballing people. This is our way of recognizing each other, whether we're in Japan or New Zealand or what's the other place there that I used to love so much, Herzegovina.
Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Yeah, well, I don't know about Bosnia, but Herzegovina, you know. If I eyeball another eyeball, I know what he's talking about, he knows what I'm talking about, and we get behind the nearest bush.
Much of what you're saying goes around the frequent and troublesome question of whether we're aiming at separatism or at integration.
To the extent that we're going to discover who we are, begin to appreciate whom we are, begin to learn to exercise these differences in ourselves, we are going to be separatists, yes. In the same way that the black people have done the same, the Chicano people have done the same. We draw together. And let's also face the fact that we know, as Hirschfeld put it many, many years ago, that first of all, gays are good for each other. We used to think of ourselves as a brotherhood. I now prefer a family, because in a family, there is a sense of giving space to the other members, taking responsibility that they have this spiritual space that we can all grow together in the way that we would like to grow. We know as gays that straights invade us. They invade us constantly. We need to refresh and renew ourselves, and we do that best with ourselves, with each other, in the family. We then, I think we want, as I think all the minorities want, we want unity and diversity. In other words, we want to be a part of a total community. We want to give and contribute to the total community, but we'd like to give it from ourselves, and we would like to some extent to give it on our terms, too.
You mentioned unity and diversity. When you say that gays look out through a certain type of window, are you saying that all gays are alike? This is a thing that bugs some people.
No. I don't think so. The window is a wide spectrum. We have to recognize that the gay window overlaps the straight window. The straight window goes, let's say, 10 degrees to the left, and the gay window goes 10 degrees to the right. And then there's an overlap in the middle where we both see through. And into that gay window, there are probably as many slots as there are gay people, really, Jimmy.
Do you see the gay movement as having any relation? Do we have any interest in other ethnic minorities, in women's rights, in peace, ecology?
Of course we do. I mean, when you come right down to it, the fact that we're tossed out of the nest early, the fact that we smell wrong to our fathers by the time we're 3 and 4 in a great many cases, you know, this old business about it's because Papa treated you wrong at 4, I don't think it ever occurs to our psychologists that maybe we smelled wrong at 4 and Pa was reacting to that, to the ugly duckling, and not to the nice little white ones that ought to be doing this and that.
Significant that a fairy wrote the story of the ugly duckling.
Yes. Very important, I think. I mean, after all, he certainly was an ugly duckling himself. Yeah. Well, anyway, the fact that we have been out of it very early means that a great many of us have been examining what we call the unexamined assumptions of the total society an awfully long time and finding them wanting, and then beginning to say, no, you know, I wish I could tell them that all they have to do is stretch a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left, and they would have a much more whole thing than they have, and that would include me. And I want to be included. I don't want to be separate. I think that, in a way, much of the oppression of all of the third world people, all of the minorities, is equally true for us, and because it's true for us, we should be joined with all of them.
And you would see then that the chief goal of the gay movement is along social, spiritual lines, rather than just law reform and claiming our seat on the bus.
Exactly. We don't belong in the nest. We don't belong inside the ghetto, and certainly the gay ghetto is as deadening and as sucking in on people as any other ghetto is. I think that we belong in the avant-garde. We belong out at the forefront of living. We are people because of of the light baggage that we carry, socially speaking, that we are in a position to try out all kinds of experiments for the whole society to take a look at and to reject or accept in pieces they choose. And I think that we're in a position to do just that. After all, we're fairies, for heaven's sake. Hey, 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 hey.
Harry Hay joined the Fairies in the Sky in 2002. He was interviewed by Jim Kepner, who was shelved in the Heavenly Archives in 1997.
For the straight folks who don't mind gays but wish they weren't so blatant.
This still relevant classic by black lesbian feminist poet Pat Barker ties a ribbon on this week's holiday special.
You know, some people got a lot of nerve. Sometimes I don't believe the things I see and hear. Have you met the woman who's shocked by two women kissing and in the same breath tells you that she's pregnant? But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or this straight couple sits next to you in a movie and you can't hear the dialogue because of the sound effects. But gays shouldn't be blatant. And the woman in your office spends your whole lunch hour talking about her new bikini drawers and how much her husband likes them. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or the hip chick in your class rattling a mile a minute while you're trying to get stoned in a john about the camping trip she took with her musician boyfriend. But gays shouldn't be blatant. You go in a public bathroom, and all over the walls, there's John loves Mary, Janice digs Richard, Pepe loves Dolores, etc. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or you go to an amusement park, and there's a tunnel of love, and pictures of straights painted on the front, and grinning couples coming in and out. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Fact is, blatant heterosexuals are all over the place. Supermarkets, movies, at work, in church, in books, on television, every day and night, every place, even in gay bars. And they want gay men and women to go hide in the closets. So to you straight folks, I say, sure, I'll go, if you go too, but I'm polite, so after you. Thank you.
Black lesbian feminist poet Pat Parker died in 1989. From the poets, writers, and thinkers, next time on This Way Out, we'll celebrate the turn of the new year with more wonderful words selected from our global queer read-in, all of which you can still peruse at thiswayout.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week, Dave Buell and Lucia Chappelle contributed program material, Tim Kaine and Boy's Entrance, and Margie Adam performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Ass at Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, David Hunt, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Thanks to everyone at WERU in East Orleans, Maine for your latest show of support. Don't miss our 2020 Year in Review now at thiswayout.org. And look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. A happier 2021 to us all. And thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on a growing number of local community radio stations and online outlets around the world, including stations in North America, Europe, South Africa, Asia, Oceania, and this one right here. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.